Good evening, everyone, and welcome to A Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I am your host, Lance White. Tonight's guest is Matt Kahn. Matt had an out-of-body experience at the age of 8 and had a profound spiritual awakening at the age of 18 and also at 28, which set him on a spiritual path. Today, he's an inspirational speaker, spiritual teacher, and intuitive healer. Matt teaches and works with clients worldwide. He is the author of Everyday Enlightenment, Awakening the Earth Angel in You, and I believe he has a book coming out soon. We'll ask him about that. So let's find out more about Matt's past by welcoming him to the show now. Hi, Matt. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing? Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, good. It's wonderful to have you. I was listening to your CD again before the show came on, and I really enjoy it quite a bit. It's very enlightened and very... It definitely shifts the energy around.
Oh, well, thank you. And when we had an event that we recorded live, and people asked their questions, and when the answers came through with this transmission of presence that we've noticed that seems to happen, we were, you know, there were a lot of energies that came in that were really ever present and palpable. And so we went back to listen to the recording of it, and we were astounded to find out that the energies that we felt that evening were locked in the frequency of the recording. And so as a way to allow these energies to be available to everyone, we decided to come out with this CD so that everyone can have a chance to be in this energy, because I think it's just being open to this energy and being immersed in this energy that allows over time the healing of the past to occur, which of course slowly opens up the heart. And when the heart opens up, the mind is then given permission to rest so that we can all honestly awaken to our true divine nature.
Yes. Well, you took the very words right out of my mouth. Would you like to share a little bit about what happened to you when you were 8? Because I thought that was a really interesting story.
Yeah, when I was 8, I went to sleep like any other night, and I immediately, you know, when I went to sleep very quickly, and I found myself in this most amazing garden. It was the most beautiful garden I can even, you know, even comprehend or even try to convey how beautiful this garden was. The colors were just so vivid, and it was as if when I looked at all these different flowers and trees with these beautiful, vibrant colors coming out, it was as if it was expressing a level of love from these colors, just looking at them, that was holding me in this garden that I'd never truly felt in my life before. And, of course, looking back, it's still one of the most amazing and probably the most incredible experience of my life. And I remember, you know, being an 8-year-old child, one of the fears I had was the fear of being in an unfamiliar environment. I remember when I first got into the garden, my thought was, I don't know where I am, and that's okay. And I was pretty astounded to not be in fear, even though I had the awareness to imagine that, hey, I should be scared right now. And so I was held by this love, and as I walked through the garden, just completely held by this level of love that even though there were things I couldn't explain, it didn't truly matter. I came to this field of waist-high flowers, and I began, you know, pushing and walking through these waist-high flowers, and I can feel my little legs trying to push and walk through this very thick field of flowers. And as I was feeling my body trying to push through these field of flowers, I also realized I was simultaneously hovering above the flowers. And as I noticed this, it was like this, oh, this is what's happening now. But at the same time, there was so much love and grace holding me in this experience that it didn't even matter that I couldn't explain how this was happening. It was just a weird sense of acceptance. And I'm probably at 8 years old, you know, I didn't know what I didn't know, so I was going with it. Yeah. And as I was hovering above these flowers, I saw this figure in front of me, about 20 feet in front of me, in a white shroud, dark long hair, dark beard, and he's motioning me towards them, and I didn't really move. And then I found myself floating towards this being. And as I floated towards the being and I was face-to-face with it, there was this glowing white light shooting out of its eyes. And to my 8-year-old mind, it reminded me of a scary film where people flip their eyelids upside down. I don't know why I thought of that, but I had that association. And it was at that moment where I had that thought that I literally fell through the garden, so to speak, fell through what felt like clouds, and very quickly fell back in my body. And that very that very distinct feeling of falling back in my body was a very jarring experience, but it was also a very interesting sensation that I've never forgotten.
Huh.
It was also one that I realized at that moment that this was not a dream. Because if it was a dream, I wouldn't have fallen back into my body. And so I was now back in my body, shaking. I was sweating, and yet I was freezing cold. And out of the corner of my eye, I saw that same being that I saw in the garden, but in like a chalky white type of material, which I now know to be etheric energy.
Uh-huh.
Like an etheric imprint of this being motioning me towards them. And as I looked straight at it, it disappeared. And from the next day on, you know, I was talking to my parents about it, and it turns out that my dad had had the exact same experience 20 years before I did.
Wow.
You know, very, very, very similar.
Okay.
And from that moment on, I began to sense the presence of about 10 to 20 of these beings in this chalky white etheric outline walking with me, never feeling scared because they always brought this feeling of comfort that I felt from the garden. And it began this path of my life where I would know things without knowing why I knew it,
uh-huh.
but there was a level of truth in knowing it that I didn't have to look for information to confirm it, and it was more true than even my name or the family that I live with. It was just a truth of, these are my guides. And my friends would say, well, you know, what are guides?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I don't know. I'm not supposed to know that yet, but that's what they are.
Uh-huh.
Well, what are they here to teach you? Oh, I have no idea. And it was this weird paradox of having a certain level of knowing, and that there were other aspects of it that I had no idea of.
Mm.
And being able to rest in the place of, I know this, I don't know why, I don't know why I don't know, and it doesn't even matter.
Mm-hmm.
And it led me on this path, you know, through my whole life to where I am now.
Mm. Amazing. It must have been difficult, you know, not being able to talk to other kids, you know, about this stuff because, you know, the world is so... it's just so ignorant about metaphysical things, and
sure.
You know, people just dismiss this kind of stuff as being craziness.
Well, you know, what's funny is that I, for on one hand, I didn't know that anyone else wasn't having these experiences.
Huh.
And even like when I talk to people today about their own experiences, I there's a part of me that doesn't understand, you know, or just doesn't get. To me, everyone has these experiences. It's just
uh-huh.
that we live in a world that has labeled it other things.
Yeah.
And who looks at life in a totally different lens, which is totally okay and acceptable. But when I was a kid, I was so immersed in my own fears and in my own thoughts and in my own, you know, really trying to live my life and put forth actions that would contradict the thoughts in my head that I didn't want other people to see in me.
Uh-huh.
So I was too busy trying to overcome my own thoughts to even look at how different I felt versus other people, because I was a kid that grew up, you know, from elementary school, middle school, and high school that just wanted to be liked and accepted. And
mm-hmm.
It was these experiences that I had that actually gave me momentary breaks from the ongoing war I had with myself.
Oh, I think that's a pretty common experience. I mean,
sure.
You know, I had the same thing, except I didn't have the guides visible.
Sure.
But, you know, and I still don't.
Right.
That's just not one of the things that I've been able to do or that I've been given.
Right.
I just have an intuitive knowing like you were talking about.
Right.
And so now you had another experience at 18 and one at 28, an awakening, spiritual awakening?
Yeah, when I was 18, I was at a harmonic concordance event that was celebrating this harmonic concordance that was happening. And up till then, you know, at 18, the Ascended Masters and Archangels started speaking to me, and I regularly would sit in my bedroom, and I would, through visions and through listening and through feeling, I would not only be able to develop my intuitive gifts through these capacities and pathways, but I would be able to speak to them. And every time I would speak to them, they would be teaching me about life from outside the third dimension.
Oh.
And so I would just sit and we would just speak, and it was like a different lesson. I always told people that I was attending the Angel Academy.
Mm-hmm.
And that I was just going to school, and whenever I was learning and speaking to them, to me it always felt like, I always had this thought of, God, this is what I wish school was actually like. This
mm-hmm.
is what I thought the school I was going to was.
Mm.
You know, because for me, going to the normal school in high school was actually a pretty unsatisfying experience.
Yeah.
And, until I learned how to creatively make it my own experience. But I would go to this Angel Academy, and I would have all these lessons taught to me, and then this harmonic concordance event was coming up, and I felt like I was being prepared for something.
Oh.
And they had said to me, when you hear the drums, sit and meditate. And I had no idea what that meant. And my
uh-huh.
friend and I were driving to the event. And I said, all I know is when I hear the drums, I have to sit and meditate. And, of course, you know, you can imagine what their response is. And so we're at this event. We're on top of a hill. Day becomes night very quickly. And, you know, all of a sudden, there's a drum circle that starts. And I remember this thought, oh, that's what they're talking about. So I sat in the dirt, and I started meditating. And I literally saw in a vision the presence of these ascended masters come down. And it was almost like an anointing or a blessing. And Melchizedek, who's my main guide, said to me, as he like traced this white, almost like this war paint of white light and purple violet light over my face, and he said, you are not only a teacher of the light, you're a student of the light, and you are a warrior of the light. And it was this primal feel, as well as this certain feeling of, you know, I'll say graduation, but
like
it's just,
initiation.
I didn't even know what it was, and it was pitch black. We're on top of the hill. My friend at the same time was looking for me, and he said, the only way I found you was because it was pitch black, and your head was glowing with light. And for the rest of the night, I was so blissed out. And, I mean, we're, you know, going to eat dinner afterwards, and I'm just in this experience, almost like what I had with the garden, of just seeing nothing but pure love and innocence in every single person. Just in a sense of such gratitude and, you know, bless this salt shaker that I use to decorate my fish taco with. You know, just everything. It was kind of silly and ridiculous, but at the same time, it made the most average and ordinary aspects of life just so much more vivid. And then when I was 28, one of the biggest experiences I had was in meditation, where the guide said, "We want to show you something." And I went up to the Akashic Records, which is a place that at that point I had been working with the guides, working with people in healing sessions, and I'd go there to work with their, you know, karmic imprints and such, and go to the library of, you know, where all the books of lifetimes exist. And I went there, and there was, you know, a table, and there are all the guides that I work with are standing in front of this table, and there's Melchizedek and Archangel Michael and Archangel Raphael and Metatron and, you know, all these, Jesus and Buddha and all these people that I had come to know as teachers that just didn't happen to be in bodies.
Right.
And I'm walking up, and it's kind of like that silly experience where you're, like if you're going to a gourmet potluck and you're the one bringing the napkins. Like, it was just this weird feeling of, like, they're all here, and I'm walking up. They're waiting for me.
Oh, my.
And so I walk up, and I'm like, okay, what you got for me? And because there's a very playful relationship that I have with them where it's such deep information, and yet at the same time, it's not taken so seriously. It's very strange in that kind of paradoxical sense. And so they say, we want to show you something. And so they reach underneath their chins, like all of a sudden they're wearing masks, and they pull off these masks of who I think these beings are, and they're all me.
No.
They're all literally me, and I had this gasp, and at the same time, I didn't get it. I mean, in the moment, like, people go, oh, my God, I mean, I didn't truly get it. I'm like,
wow.
Oh, my God, that's amazing, but I have no idea what this means.
Wow.
And then they said to me, just in the same way that I say to you and everyone that's listening, if you were to go back in time and visit yourself as a child right now, you as a child wouldn't recognize you as its evolution. It would see you as the everything it's not right now. Therefore, it would only be able to recognize you as an angel or a guide, because you would be everything that it's not in that moment. And they said, we are not only what you're becoming, we are what you've already become as we step back into the present moment to visit ourselves in spiritual childhood.
Wow.
And it was at that moment that it was no longer about, I'm the guy that talks to angels, I'm the guy that, you know, that uses this to help connect people. It was not about separation anymore. It was about, the only way that I could have recognized that level of information is for my mind to conceptualize it in form in the same way that I'm conceptualizing the form of a body. And so it was this understanding that not only the ascended masters, not only the archangels, not only the sands on the beach, not only the ground that I walk on, it is all what I am.
Wow.
And the realization was, if it's all what I am, then it's all what we are. It's kind of like once the ego finally gets what it wants, once the ego finally realizes, aha, it's true, I'm God, it's kind of like this silly little letdown, because when you realize that you are in fact one with God, you realize in that same breath that so is everyone else. And so it's kind of like this really funny melancholy celebration for the ego, because it gets what it wants, but it doesn't, because it can only get what it wants in a world of separateness.
Interesting.
And so it began this really, really deep journey where, you know, a couple of years after that, I had moved to Seattle, and I really had the rug pulled from underneath me. I thought I knew it, you know, okay, this is what I'm doing, this is my journey, I'm doing this work, and it all changed. It all went into teaching awakening, and it became totally, totally different. And it became not only, living in the embodiment of this, but it became really understanding the difference between, although I have an emotional feeling right now that says this, or I have a thought that suggests this, my willingness to be totally okay with that feeling and this thought and not do anything about it, but just be present with it, began my living meditation.
Wow.
And that the people in my life and in the situations I found myself in were just manifestations of that meditation. And that even though on the surface things were happening, on the surface I could say, wow, look what this person just did to me. But
right.
On a deeper level, look at this healer that has manifested themselves into my life to bring up into my awareness only the stuff that remains stuck in me.
Exactly. Exactly.
And so it all changed. It all changed. And it was, like, bizarre because, one, people in my family, you know, very supportive. People would, you know, were very supportive of the work I was doing at that time. As you know, some people in my family were kind of like, okay, Matt's a healer. He thinks he talks to guides. And, you know, for a lot of people, it was kind of like that schizophrenic kind of thing. And once they finally accepted, okay, this is the work that he does, and then it totally changed.
Wow.
It totally changed, and it actually became, I won't say less mystical, but I think what's happening is because this energy and everything within us is kind of blossoming so quickly, mystical is kind of an experience that is had when most of the world is rejecting the possibility of something like this. As the world comes into something like this or into the knowing of something more existing, it can't really be mystical because mystical is kind of something that is, you know, I am now having the experience of something that I never knew existed. But now we're all coming into a collective knowing that this does exist, and when we know how deeply this exists, this is just par for the course of what happens when you're a spirit living inside a human body.
Yeah, right, right. Well, you know, in a sense, then, you're basically what you're saying is that we're all actually angelic humans, regardless of appearance or what we're doing or anything that appears a certain way, but inside we're all spirit.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think I had one of the funniest experiences with guidance in India recently when I was, you know, because as I'm in India walking around, also talking to the guides and having this little interesting conversation. And one of the things that I was told by an ascended master named Dwal Kool, who's that ascended master, he said there's absolutely no separation between and within all forms. But then the second thing he said was, it just appears that way. And that to me was the funniest thing I'd ever heard was, you know, it wasn't like you're rejecting your senses, but it totally subdued the importance of my senses in one sentence where I could sit there and go, but it, look, it's separate. And then they would say, it just appears that way. And I would go, oh, okay. It just, no matter how concrete the evidence is with your senses, it just appears that way.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the infinite one appearing as many, and we are just aspects of that. And our eyes, of course, just like other senses, are only sensing the differences in things. We're only looking at, we can only see objects because we can sense the edges of it, so our eyes can kind of make shape out of that. But deep within that, deep within and beyond where there's form, is the space where all is one. And the irony is that in the space where all is one, there is no you or me that notices it. And so that, to me, is probably one of the most simple and yet also complex ideas of this spiritual journey, is because, to me, the only journey is the journey of integrating the ego, which is, of course, learning how to have a loving relationship with your reality and, of course, your ego, and everyone else is a part of that.
Right.
But to really understand where in the space where all is one, there is no you or me that can actually step out of the one to see it. It can only be that within the one that can only imagine what it might be like to be outside of it, but that's only in its own imagination.
Well, then, how is it that you would be separated from the Ascended Masters?
I'm not, and it's the thing is, like, we are, just like when they took off the masks and, you know, they became me. It was that they take form to look like something different than
right.
how I look in the mirror,
right.
only because it's coming from a level of consciousness that would be something different than the conditioning that up until that point I had been listening to.
Right, that makes sense.
Right, so when you're listening to information that comes from different dimensions doesn't have to necessarily be higher. Our mind wants to make it higher, but then when your mind makes it higher, there's always this sense in your mind of, if it's higher, then how high do I have to reach to you know, be in alignment with it, which of course is that idea of heaven being so far away and we're stuck down in Earth and we have to figure out a way to ascend and get on the rocket ship and leave Earth because this is the place we're stuck at. But the reality is that a dimension such as that where all is one is just a wider point of view.
Tell me what, I have several questions that are just burning now.
Sure.
What is life like outside the third dimension? And everybody that I've talked to seems to believe that we're headed for an ascension into a fourth or fifth dimension.
Sure.
And also that heaven is descending into matter and spiritualizing matter, creating the divine illumination. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, what's interesting is that I have a lot of friends that talk to me about these kinds of things, and,
mm-hmm.
I, and I don't know if it's because, you know, we're all called to do different things.
Right.
But I just know, because when I tune into my instincts, my intuition, what I am here to do and what I've been asked to do and what I've willingly stepped into is to help provide a transmission of presence that can help teach the world, of course, collectively and individually, how to live in this new way within the third dimension, where we're not stuck in the opposites, we're not stuck in the polarity, where we can live in a world of oneness. And what's interesting is that all the guidance I get has absolutely nothing to do, and this is the irony, nothing to do with this shift that's going to happen, you know, 2012, going into fifth dimensional consciousness. And I've even asked questions about that, and the only response that I get is, your job is to teach the embodiment of it right now.
Hmm.
And that in my awareness, not that, you know, there's any right or wrong, but just, you know, the piece of the puzzle I've been given to help in this collective matter,
mm-hmm.
is that I'm here to just teach the embodiment of being in that place now. Not that there's anything to prepare for.
Mm-hmm.
That literally any preparation is just the practice of
right.
how to live in this new way, which is basically just learning to see through the veil of illusion, see through the ideas of separateness, being able to open our heart, and literally it's just a practice of serving love and serving acceptance, and being able to realize that every single thing you'll ever encounter and see and imagine, all of that is an aspect of you. So how it shows up and how it makes you feel is just another sophisticated level of your own healing. And so to be able to interact with the world like that, and because we're so interconnected, the depth and capacity to which you heal yourself only allows the world outside of you to change in that same depth.
Huh.
And so if people want to live in an ascended world, they don't have to take the time to do the things that serve the world outside of them.
Right.
The world outside of them that will begin to, over time, reflect back all the things that they want to see based on what work they do within themselves. Because what I do within myself affects every single thing in consciousness and every single universe, in the same way that if someone came to me and we were doing healing work, and there'd be different levels and capacities to the healing work, between session one and session two, I would look at all the things they're challenged with. I would then take an inventory. And by the way, this is a little secret of healing, at least for how I do my healing.
Okay.
I would then take an inventory of all of the ways that what they're troubled with still applies to my life. And between session one and session two, I would work on resolving those things in the name of freeing them as an aspect of self.
Wow.
And by the next session, it's a combination between the willingness I am to go into this deeper place, because it's always the willingness to change and have the flexibility.
Right, right.
And of course, the depth that I go into that will reflect back in them what changes they've noticed in their life. Because we're all one, and so when you can play with that,
mm-hmm.
there literally becomes no separateness, so that when the person comes back and goes, my God, I've had all these changes and all these things are going much better in my life,
mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily the joy of look at how fantastic of a healer I am, as much as thank you and bless you for giving me this feedback, because it was you who has manifested into my reality and gave me the opportunity to make these changes as we both continue to grow collectively together as one.
Huh, that makes a lot of sense.
And so it's one of those things where, you know, we learn to take our own advice to heart, that any advice that we would actually offer to someone, we actually apply in our own lives.
Right, right.
And we actually just then watch as the outside world begins to shift and change. And if those people don't decide to shift and change, they're going to quickly find themselves in a different reality where they can be surrounded by people that will continue to agree and feed their reality.
Ah, so in other words, let's take a for instance.
Yeah.
All the corruption and greed and, you know, the bad things that are going on in the world, the wars and so on and so forth.
Right.
If we accept that and change within ourselves, then
right.
our reality will shift.
Right.
And those things will start to kind of slough off, because if they don't change, they stay at their own level.
Well, yeah, like one of the things I look at when I look at the news or I look at wars or anything of that nature,
mm-hmm.
is that the greatest, you know, to me, some of the greatest mysteries of why wars are manifested can be looked at through polarity. Polarity being the balance of, you know, opposites.
Mm-hmm.
With light, there is darkness, and these kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is that whenever there is a manifestation of tragedy or war or atrocity on this planet,
mm-hmm.
we as human beings, on an innate level, right, not on a conscious thinking level, because the conscious level is, of course, what we think about this, but on an innate level, we as human beings balance whatever we are witnessing by going to the opposite side of polarity, which is why, like, when September 11th happened, for 3 days, all of a sudden, strangers became friends, everyone was neighbors, we're all working together as one, and it kind of shifted into a different energy, because when we see something happen on one end of, you know, polarity, we innately balance that by going to the opposite side. So the question remains, how many times do we need to witness an atrocity to then balance it with something positive or loving or heart-opening?
Uh-huh.
And can we just learn to practice keeping our hearts open so that we don't have to be constantly motivated into opening our hearts only when the going gets tough?
Exactly, exactly.
So I think that all these things that happen in the world are actually just happening in the way that helps us collectively and individually practice to hold our heart open. You know, what saves us from the plight of our own tragedies and lives and dramas is that something will happen that will take us away from our, you know, self-indulgent focus, and we'll put the focus on something outside of us that's far more tragic than our own lives, and we'll start to then give. And so the reality to me, or what I really think about, is that if we could notice that however we're affected by things in the world, what we're feeling in our body is bringing our awareness to what's always been stuck there. And so that's happening that seems tragic is also the grace of the universe trying to help us heal by feeling what's been stuck and repressed and resisted. And if we can breathe through those feelings as, you know, as tight or as constrictive or as painful as they are, the door of the heart starts to open, and we let go of that resistance of the past, and then we can look at that experience as being part of our own healing. And then over time, there's nothing that would need to manifest to bring anything to awareness, because awareness has already cleansed the body of all of those experiences of the past. And so to me, the negativity is only constantly manifesting to affect people who don't have enough time or perspective in their life to fit in this inner journey of even caring about their feelings,
because
they're too busy trying to run towards the future where they could be the most powerful whoever they wish to be.
Right, right.
So it's just, and so when we look at like 2012 or whatever.
Yes.
When we imagine, you know, this big frequency of energy coming in, there's going to be the alignment of things coming into position, and a new energy coming to Earth that's never happened before.
Right.
And just like when any light comes into the body, it's a spotlight, and the spotlight shines on all of the resistance and all of the parts of our past that has been resisted and not made peace with, and it brings it up to the surface, such as when you sit in the presence of someone who is extremely peaceful, it either brings you to a deeper level of peace, or it brings up your own inner frustrations, such as you put people into a group meditation, and there's going to be a few people that are going to start boiling light like tea kettles, because the light goes in, and it brings up to the surface what they have resisted and not looked at,
yeah,
and not released. And in the same way, when this light comes through, and people haven't worked on their stuff, it's just going to bring it all to the surface. So for people that are living in a world that is only conceptual, that world might look like it's falling apart, but it's only falling apart in the deepest part of what is healing us beyond our conceptual nature. And for those of us that are doing the work right now, we're just going to be those beacons holding the space to bring in that energy. And I think that the grace is that those of us that are holding the light and are going to be able to bring the light through based on all the work we're doing right now are just going to be those that are going to be able to assist and love and care for those that still haven't gone through their healing. So it really doesn't matter to me, because it's not as if I can do the work and save myself and sit in some sort of cave, and while the rest of the world falls apart, I can go, well, I did my homework.
Right.
I got an A-plus on that one, because the fact of the matter is, no matter what happens, when the shift happens, I'm going to be the one that is loving the world and helping whoever needs help.
That's beautiful. I love that.
Yeah, and so I hope that for whoever, you know, however we're looking at this cosmic shift and however we're looking at this, if we could just look at it through the eyes of compassion, not only to that, you know, as aware as I am, I get to help those that are not so aware, but to also realize that my interactions with unconsciousness is actually what challenges me to practice being more conscious. So I'm really blessed to live in a world where there is unconsciousness because it's always challenging me to a deeper level. And when there are times where I have this feeling of resistance, I kind of like smile and almost want to shake the hand of the person that upset me. And I went, wow, I thought I was really peaceful. You really got me. That was really good. They have no idea what I'm talking about. But to me, that's how I look at it. I'm blessed that the unconsciousness is what helps to keep this humility in me alive, because I'm constantly learning to balance the intensity of what unconsciousness I see with the intensity of acceptance and love in all moments. And there's no end to it. There's no end to it. So, you know, to me, it's all one big, what did I say to someone the other day? I said, you know, the spiritual life is kind of like a game, and those of us that are more conscious or aware win. But what we win is the opportunity to be more compassionate to those that aren't conscious.
Yeah, I like that. That's great.
Yeah.
What are some of the things that the Ascended Masters have shared with you about us in general?
Well, it's interesting, because what they shared with me is that Ascended Masters and Archangels and Spirit Guides only exist to assist individuals through the realm of self, meaning Ascended Masters and Archangels will be there to help us, to help us through a world that seems separate, but it's a world of, you know, a world of appearing separateness, so that, you know, into this awakening to realize what we truly are. So to me, all the information that I've gotten is only to help us awaken to whatever we see, whatever we interact with, is just another aspect of what we are. One of the most fascinating things that I was talking with some guides about a couple weeks ago, and they kind of brought it in kind of a download. I get these downloads real quick, and then I kind of translate into words and these concepts, and it was extremely big. And I didn't have any real point of reference for what came through. And then I was walking around in my day, and I kind of got it. and what I got, which to me is the essence of what the Ascended Masters have always taught, is I was walking around, and I started to realize that the world that I live in, and for others who are listening to this, they may have the same realization, that the world that we live in is actually a manifestation of our own mind. That if you wanted to know what it would be like to crawl inside your own ear and walk around your mind, and to walk around the manifestation of your thoughts and your ideas and your past and all these things, it would literally be the world that you see outside of you.
Wow.
And that literally, the magic trick is that every single one of us are living inside our own minds, and yet the magic is that we have no definitive way to determine where my mind ends and yours begins. And that literally we are living in our own minds, with each of our egos just being one of infinite attitudes of the one true undivided self.
So really, a large part of this process is the breaking down of ego and the realization of self as other, as one.
As one. And you know, the egoic survival mechanism, of course, is fight or flight. But
right.
But I'm not going to run from what I am. and I'm not going to fight what I am.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole idea of awakening is actually just the process of breaking down the egoic structure and literally going against the grain of your own instincts, because instincts say run or fight.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're doing neither, if you decide, I feel like I want to run, I feel like I want to fight, and this crazy guy Matt is telling me to breathe. Right? It's not necessarily the most normal path, and it's not necessarily one that is absent of intensity.
Uh-huh.
At the same time, when your goal is wanting to be free,
mm-hmm.
to know the truth, and to allow the heart to open, to allow the door of the heart to blow open so intensely that literally the door of the heart gets unbolted, unhinged,
mm-hmm.
so that there is no door. It is just open.
Mm-hmm.
When that is something that appeals to someone, and of course when this happens, the body begins to heal itself, the mind begins to rest in a state of peace. All these things are just byproducts of the opening of the heart,
mm-hmm.
to the understanding that all is one, as a, you know, as a frequency of light manifested and threaded together through a fabric of love. And that is literally just the basis of, to me, the whole awakening process, is to realize is that whatever you are, whatever you want to label this, whatever you want to call what you are,
uh-huh.
right? Some people would say we're angelic beings. Some people would say, you know, whatever it is, whatever you want to call you is what everything is. Or, you know, to me, the whole spiritual journey, someone asked me, they said, so sum up the whole spiritual journey. I said, okay, sit around and decide what you want to call what created you. And whatever you decide that is, everything is. That, to me, is the entire journey.
Huh.
Come up with a name, right? You can say it's God. You can say it's the universe. You can call it whatever. You can make up a new name.
Right.
Right. You can decide you want to make up your own language and call it something. You can draw a picture of it. Whatever it is in everything.
Hmm.
That's it.
Hmm.
That's it. And everything that the mind brings to you as thought is a point of view that can't even be taken seriously or literally, because it's coming from a perspective, you know, a thought or a question. It's coming from a perspective that is already distorted or tainted, because it's coming from an assumption as if things are separate.
Right.
So what I learned to do with the help of the guys and, of course, just my own experiences and my own observations is that I'm not here to ignore my mind, because just as I'm here to love everything, and loving everything means I love my ego and I love all egos.
Right?
So
right.
It's my best teacher of love. But what I'm here to do is I'm here to answer all the questions of my mind with simply a deep breath.
Hmm.
That's all I do, is when I have a thought or when I have a question, I take a deep breath.
Mm-hmm.
Because the question itself is not necessarily fair, because it's not coming from a place of oneness, it's coming from a place of separation.
Mm-hmm.
And yet every question or thought is not inclusive of oneness, it's exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we talk about one point of view, we're now excluding everything that point of view is not.
Yep.
So
yep.
When we're in a true alignment of oneness, there is only silence. Because any single word we would say would be separating from the wholeness.
Yeah.
Not that we can't have conversations, and I love having conversations just like what we're having right now.
Yeah.
It's a way of returning awareness to itself, and a way of bringing about, you know, bringing awareness to that infinite spacious silence that, of course, resides within and underneath this current of noise that we live in.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, what's so interesting is when you totally have this breakdown and awakening into that place of silence and oneness.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, when you have this breakdown into it,
mm-hmm.
instead of hiding from the words or hiding from the concepts, you realize it's just a part of living in this planet, and you actually don't mind anymore. Like, I don't mind having conversations.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't take them seriously.
Right.
I mean, I don't take most of anything in my life too seriously,
right.
because it's just an experience. Like, someone calls me, you know, Matt's someone who gives good advice. Matt, what do you think about this? What should I do?
Mm.
I don't know. Right? Well, when's this going to happen in my life? Probably never. Because I'm there to bring them into the emotions that they want to resist. And I'm there to be with them and say, I'm here to love you and to remind you how safe you are to feel what you've been resisting that has caused you to feel vulnerable. Because when you're vulnerable, the ego thinks it's weak. And weak egos only are in survival and are figuring out a way to fight the weakness or to run away from it.
Mm.
And so as a friend, I only am, and as a teacher, I'm there to help others be okay with feeling what has been not okay.
Right.
In my presence, nothing has to be avoided.
Right.
It's okay whatever it feels like. It's okay with whatever thoughts follow, you know, in describing what it feels like. And I'm only here to breathe with you, to love you, and to allow this to heal itself.
Wow. Matt, you know, I've had some guests on recently who have shared about their near-death experiences.
Sure.
And one of them was Daniel Brinkley, and he's probably the most well-known of them all. But what the common thread seems to be with the near-death experience is that as spirit, when we cross over, there's a life review.
Right.
And that somehow that we have to relive everything that's ever been done from three different perspectives, you know, from our own, from the perspective of everybody that we've affected.
Sure.
And also from an omniscient perspective.
Sure.
Does that map over your experiences with the Ascended Masters and what you've been taught through them?
Well, it's interesting because with my direct experience, I would say that a lot of people who have people that when they go into their experience of life review, they're seeing their life on a holographic screen, just like in the same way that in that movie Christmas Story, I think with Scrooge, when the ghost of Christmas Past would come and show him his life. That's like the first time, you know, Scrooge of course is the manifestation or the, you know, the embodiment of the ego. This is the first time that, you know, Scrooge had ever seen himself outside of himself. So much like that, people, when they see these screens, this is the first time that they've ever seen themselves from a state of observation, that they've never been able to see themselves outside of their own story. And so it's in that that people often in life review acquire and receive the knowledge that they kind of, or that kind of eluded their awareness on the earth plane. What was interesting is I had a conversation, and this sounds like a setup for a joke. I had a conversation with an archangel about a week and a half ago, and he said, you know, when you get to heaven, and heaven, of course, is just kind of a joke of what the angels speak of, because, you know, they're just using our own human references.
Oh, right.
So the reality is that, you know, if life were a Halloween party, heaven disguises itself with a costume of Earth. That to me is just how I can kind of sum up how I see reality, but... You know, I was talking to an archangel, and they said, you know, when you go to heaven, there's only one question that's ever asked of you. And I said, really, what's that? And they said, the one question is, did you do everything that you wanted to do? And usually the soul, well, we would say, well, I didn't get to do this, I didn't get to do that. I really wish I could have done this like that after seeing my life review. I wish I could have done this totally different. And all of the answers of, did you do everything you wanted to do, is literally what writes the script for the next incarnation.
Oh, yikes.
It's the only question. And because it's only, and it's funny, because if you think about it, it's the only question that is expressed from absolute freedom. Did you do everything you wanted to do?
Now, what if the answer is yes?
Then who knows? Maybe you then just live in your infinite and permanent, you know, reality of heaven. Yet, like for example, what I was thinking about a couple years ago, I was looking at a blade of grass, and the blade of grass is completely surrendered, much like nature. Everything that surrounds us that seems to be inanimate is both living, but it's completely in the surrendered state. Everything moves at one. It doesn't necessarily have an individual egoic, you know, perspective. You don't necessarily, you know, hear a tree complaining about the wind messing up its branches. You don't hear the grass say, you know, to the tree, you know, people used to come and look at me before you came and stole all my thunder. You don't hear all this happening. And so what I think of is, what if you could look deep inside of a blade of grass, and the light that comprises the blade of grass, deep inside of that is of a soul who lives in its permanent level of heaven. Maybe for that soul, it's dancing with their lover, or, you know, playing softball with their friends during childhood, and they get to live in those fond memories for infinity, and yet on the on a different perspective, that soul is actually now just a blade of grass.
Wow, that's an interesting thought.
And so I look at everything that seems to be inanimate, and I go, oh, these are my teachers. These are my teachers who have already had this experience, even though it's part of what I am.
Oh, that's wonderful. I love that.
And, you know, I wonder, and I always look into a flower, and I always go, you know, I always think, like, you know, what's that soul's heaven like?
Yeah.
And then the irony is that whatever that soul's heaven is like, on this level, it's a part of my heaven.
Huh. Wow.
And there's such a level of beauty there for me. And I think for all of us, it's just we have to be able to be open to recognizing it.
Yeah.
That, wow, look at how beautiful this flower is. And, you know, this flower is as beautiful as it could ever be, just here to be a part of my beautiful reality.
Huh.
And it's just an amazing thing. And I think another aspect of the whole awakening process could be talked about, you know, just before about, you know, if every day was Halloween, that heaven wears the costume of Earth. One of the things that I also kind of realized, and I had a meditation about this, was could you imagine, and this was actually taught to me by Jesus, which I know sounds like the silliest thing to preface, but if you could imagine you're an angel in heaven and you come across this meadow and you decide to take a nap, and you take this nap in this beautiful meadow, and during your nap you have this dream of something known as consciousness, and you get so wrapped up in this dream of you and all of its evolution that you forget that you're just dreaming, and then when you think the life ends and the light comes from you, it's actually just the angel waking up from its nap in the meadow of heaven.
Wow.
And that this was all a dream all along, and that you and I are just the characters that angels, you know, create themselves to be in the dream state while taking naps in heaven.
Well, I like that one.
And so for me, it became this very dramatic realization.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't even one that made a lot of sense. Like, it was, I felt this at the core of my being.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you know, I couldn't really understand it beyond certain levels. That was that life is just a dream.
Mm-hmm.
That life is just an absolute dream, and that we're just waking up from the dream while being within the dream.
And the awakening process is a relatively new one, isn't it?
You know, I mean, I think that there's been a lot of teachers over the years that have been teaching this for many centuries. I mean, you go back to Lao Tzu.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't even fathom how long ago that was that he wrote the Oh, God, what book did you write it for? He has a very famous book that Wayne Dyer actually just reinterpreted. I think it's The Tao. And,
yeah,
you know, that was many, many, many centuries and years ago. And yet, of course, you know, we have contemporary teachers like Ram Dass and Eckhart Tolle and even Adi Ashanti and, you know, whatever contributions that my partner Julie and I are making, teachers like Gangaji. And, you know, you always have these teachers that are going to point to this.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's now just become something that is being brought into, I don't want to say mainstream, but it's being brought into the spiritual mainstream, definitely. And I think the reason is because teachings like this will always be brought to the forefront the more people become tired. Because, like, I was talking to someone the other day about this whole work, and they were saying, but I do this work, I do this modality, I've been certified in this healing technique, I've done all this, and they asked me, what could you possibly teach me? My answer was nothing, and only call me when it stops working. And they had no idea what I was talking about.
Uh-huh.
Because this awakening can only come from the most sincerest parts of us when we are either so curious or so, you know, so in alignment with I wish to know the truth, but what for most people it actually arises is it actually comes from I am so tired of continuing to do what doesn't seem to work.
Exactly.
And is at that place when non-dualistic teachings or teachings of awakening can actually work, because the person sometimes needs to be so exhausted and tired that there is no part of them that can even defend.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense too. You know, I'm curious about something else. I know a lot of people who are listening are probably going to wonder about this.
Sure.
Does everybody, does each soul that has incarnated here into the dream also have their angels and guides just as you do, and except that we have a different level of awareness, we're not necessarily called to experience it as you did?
Yeah, I think that everyone has that level of awareness, because basically, if you think of angels and ascended masters, if the angel is dreaming and we are the characters that are in the dream, than the angels and ascended masters is basically just the knowledge of the angel that's dreaming the dream. So it's kind of like if I was in the middle of a dream, like let's say you go to sleep at night and you have a dream,
uh-huh.
and you're in the middle of some wacky experience and you know it's a dream, and there is a being that comes to me in the dream that gives me some information that helps me. What I may not realize is that angel that I think is an angel is actually is coming from the knowledge of the me that's sleeping and dreaming the dream.
Okay.
So it's like the angels and ascended masters are who we actually are in heaven just taking naps, and it's us through these connections that are connecting with the wisdom of that which is dreaming the dream.
Okay.
And of course it gets so complex because the mind likes to separate things out into terms and conditions.
Yeah.
That there's no way to really understand that because in that state where all is one, there is no mind because the universe itself is the mind. And so there wants to be this perspective that wants to step outside of it
yeah.
and wants to kind of fathom or conceptualize or understand it.
Yeah.
But if it could step outside and understand it, it wouldn't be one. And so it can
right.
only be a part of the one, imagining what it's like to fathom something that
right.
can't ever be fathomable because it's only being imagined.
Yeah. Believe it or not, I did follow that.
No, and it's just kind of a wacky thing, but
yeah.
it's as wacky as our minds can ever be, and our mind is a beautiful, beautiful tool. It's a beautiful thing. At the same time, when we use it in a direction or use it to try to understand things that can't actually be understood,
yeah.
it makes sense why we would come up with distorted theories.
Yeah. Now, when you went to that heavenly place that you're described with the flowers and all that,
yeah,
I'm guessing that that's it's a different dimension than the one we're in. Obviously, it's not the third dimension,
right?
So that's the real world, supposedly. I mean, what dimension does that exist in? And,
I don't really know,
okay.
like which specific number. I mean, intuitive people that have told me my whole life, like, oh, you went to this dimension or you went here, and
I guess I'm in my head trying to figure it out.
No, and that's okay because I've done the same thing. At the same time, I've always known that, you know, like for example, someone would say you've been to this dimension, and then I'd kind of do some research on that dimension. And as long as I would have found some good stuff about that dimension, I would believe it.
Yeah.
And then if it was I don't know if that's the dimension I went to, but what I understand it to be is that if you looked at the world around you, right, the world that you see is a third dimension.
Right.
And if you were to look at reality as kind of like just wallpaper, and the strips of wallpaper would start to fall down strip by strip around you,
mm.
and all of a sudden as every layer of wallpaper, like as if the wallpaper would start to strip and all of a sudden your wall would no longer exist,
mm.
and all of a sudden when it all came tumbling down, you're in the garden.
Mm.
That's how I see it.
Okay.
And that the world that you see is a wallpaper of thought.
Okay.
And that literally within
like that.
It and beyond it within it, because there is no distance, right? There's
yeah,
no distance
right,
in
right.
space. Within and throughout that is the garden. So I always kind of joke with people and think that this earthly experience is us just being lost in a closet in heaven we didn't know existed.
Well, I like that. That's really good.
So that way, because even though it's a concept and it's an idea,
yeah.
it's at least a concept and idea that actually provides us an opportunity to not only stop, but just to settle into the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
Just to stop for a second and just to, you know, oh. You know, of course, in the mind has the next question, but okay, but then what should I do? What am I here to do?
Right, of
right.
course. Yeah, that's the obvious next question.
Right. What am I here to do? And that's when the meditation actually begins. Is it's not actually waiting for the answer; it's being okay with the question.
Mm.
And when we sit in the relaxation
mm-hmm.
of that,
mm-hmm.
the question starts to disappear.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Any answer anyone has ever received, or any answer of insight anyone's ever transmitted, is only been the most creative idea that gives us a chance to mm. stop focusing on the question. And if you stop focusing on the question long enough, it disappears and you forget it.
Yeah.
That's how you know there is no true answer, because an answer
yeah.
is not even an answer. It's just an
right.
opportunity to forget what you're asking.
Right, right.
And
right.
so we just take deep breaths. I don't know what I'm here to do, and
mm.
yet the meditation is not to freak out. Or if you do, that's okay too.
Mm.
The meditation is to acknowledge that you don't know what you're here to do,
mm-hmm.
or you don't know why you're here, and to be okay with the you that doesn't know.
And to be able to live in that question.
Just to be okay. Like, yeah. Our job is to love the one life seems to be happening to.
Oh, yes.
So what people ask me, Matt, why did this happen? Right? Commonly people will say, I didn't, why did I manifest this? Because they're going with lots of the law of attraction theories that are out there.
Right.
Well, why did I manifest this? I didn't want this. And I said, it happened so that you could love the one life is happening to. Uh-huh. Right now life is happening to you, and this you that's feeling this way is in need of your love, and before your love can be there for you, acceptance needs to be there.
Yeah.
And that's when we really get to the grit and the core of the spiritual journey, where it's not necessarily very flashy. It's not necessarily packaged in the way that, would make it very appealing, but it is touching at the core of our own humility and bringing us into alignment with grace.
Wow. Well, Matt, this hour has just literally flown by on angel's wings.
I know.
Would you be so kind as to mention your website and your CD and let us know when your book's coming out?
Absolutely. The website is truedivinenature.com. Mm-hmm. My partner Julie and I put this website up, and at this website you can find all sorts of information about our upcoming appearances and also our CD, this Awakening to Earth Angel and You CD, that features this transmission of presence and the healing energy that we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And in the book, we're going to be working on probably later this year, and we're still kind of fine-tuning what the focus of that book is going to be, and we're also working on a brand new CD project, but truedivinenature.com is our website, and there you can sign up to be a part of our free newsletter and to always be up to date on what we're doing, and of course just to always stay in alignment with these messages, which the messages, no matter who's transmitting them and for where it's coming from, is always just going to be an amazing reminder. And it's a reminder that brings us back from our ideas and from thought. I heard someone the other day say something really amazing, and they said, we only live and die in our own minds.
Hmm.
And so these transmissions, these messages, are only here to bring us out of the mind, out of the daydream, so that we can then just be present to whatever is.
Hmm.
And when we bring ourselves out of that daydream, when we take a deep breath and we accept what is, we're back in the awakening.
Hmm.
And that's really what we're just constantly returning to. There is no awakened person. There's only an awakened state, and the awakened state is always happening. It's just bringing awareness back into alignment with the awakened state.
Wonderful. Well, Matt, thank you so very much. I had a wonderful time with you, and it'll take me all night to kind of digest this information.
Wonderful. And what I would say to that is that the words are there just to hold the space for the energy, and so a lot of times the mind gets so scrambled with these kinds of insights, and especially when, the mind wants to try to put it together in one way and literally just so much at once.
Right.
What I always say, no matter where these, how these messages are transmitted through the CD or even through these kinds of interviews, it's just the simple idea of just breathing it in, noticing how you feel, and if there's anything in this that you need to remember, it will come back to you when you need it.
Mm.
So just be with whatever feeling you have felt in this space that we've shared together. And let that be the preview of whatever the words we're trying to convey. Whatever I said today was only pointing to what you're feeling right now. And if there's any part of this that need to be remembered, it will be brought back to your attention whenever you need it.
Well, thank you very much, Matt.
You're very welcome.
And I'd love to have you back sometime and share some more about your experiences.
My pleasure. And next time, I want to hear more about yours. I read your story, and it was fascinating.
Oh, I'll send you a copy of my book when it comes out in a few weeks.
That would be wonderful.
Thanks again, Matt. And you're doing a wonderful job for everybody. It's great to talk to you.
Oh, thank you. Many blessings.
And good night to the audience, and many blessings.
Goodbye.